Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
It is a post men's national championship Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. Welcome in. We have 2.5 hours to talk here on the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am Gabe Kuhn, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman on X at G underscore Kuhn 71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That'd be Connor Dunning on X at C Dunning 929. Connor, what's the word?
What's up, man?
I'm hanging in there. Have you seen the finale of Curb? You still haven't seen it?
I still have not seen it. I'm actually currently trying to recover. Gene Hackman just popped up as trending on Twitter, right, and had a momentary panic attack. Turns out he was just wearing something eccentric or something like that.
Okay.
We cannot do that with 90-plus celebrities on Twitter. We have got to put the reason they are trending. Good Lord.
Yeah, you always think it's death. That's the first thing you go to.
Yeah.
So you got scared for a minute. You know what else was trending on social media yesterday?
What's that?
My eyes hurt. Did you see that? My eyes. And my eyes hurt. There was Google searches yesterday. There was a spike in the morning during the solar eclipse of my eyes hurt on Google. And they were trying to get answers. Optometrists are doing well. They must be doing well today, potentially.
Well done, everyone.
Yeah. You know what? They tell you, don't look right into it. And everyone inevitably looks directly into it. But, yeah, there's a lot of things trending on social media. John Calipari's trending. UConn's trending. John Morant, self-defense. That'll be a discussion today. That is trending. But we have 2.5 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to pass you off a little bit later at about 6:30 to Jessica Benson for Grizzlies versus Spurs pregame. And then tip will be at 7 o'clock. But as far as guests are concerned, very simple. Jeff Calkins at 5 o'clock from the Daily Memphis and the Jeff Calkins Show. And then, as is customary, every single Tuesday, Christian Fowler from Bluff City Media, senior writer and content creator for them. We also have a podcast called the On the Bluff Podcast, which is very convenient. Every time he comes on the show, it releases at noon, right before he comes on. So a lot of the things we talk about on the show or on the podcast will be talked about on the show. So we'll talk to him at 6 o'clock. But that podcast, On the Bluff, you can find full-length video version on YouTube, find it on Spotify, find it on Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find that podcast. But like I said, we'll be getting out at 6:30. So we need to rip and roar here. National championship was last night. UConn was favored by 7.5 against Purdue, and they displayed pure dominance. It wasn't even close. As you got into the second half, you saw this thing going directly in UConn's hands. 75-60, they ultimately end up winning. And I'll get to a stat later, but it's the first time since 67, 68, 69 where a team has gone back-to-back and won by 15-plus in each of the national championships, or 13-plus in each of the national championships. I can't really, you know, liken this to anything else we've seen in the 21st century. Of course, everybody's going to look back at Florida and the back-to-back that they had in 06, 07, but the dominance that's been displayed the last 2 years is absolutely insane. Now, the game itself, few points to really bring up, and I think it really starts with UConn and their perimeter defense last night. What they were able to do in running Purdue off of the three-point line, a 40% three-point shooting team during the regular season, second in three-point field goal percentage during the regular season. They ran them off the three-point line, and if you get ran off the three-point line that badly, you have no chance of winning a national championship. You have no chance of capitalizing in the situation that you're in. They went 1 for freaking 7. They only got 7 up. The thought process from UConn was very simple. All right, let Zach Edey get the ball. We're going to make it hard on him. But let him get the ball. Let him go try to score as much as possible. He ended up with 37 and 10, but he was 15 for 25. He put it up on 25 shots, got those 37 points. He went to the free throw line about 10 times, so there was that. But they said, Zach Edey, you can go cook. No one else can get anything. And that's exactly what happened. He accounted for 61% of Purdue's points, and then only five players, including Zach Edey, scored on Purdue. Second in scoring was Braden Smith, but it's not like he had a good night. He had 12 points, three rebounds, eight assists, 4 for 12 from the field, 1 for 2 from three. He accounted for their only made three-point field goal of the entire night. And one thing that really just jumped off the page for me is they picked him up the entire length of the floor and made everything impossible on him. And he tried to set up the offense. He only had eight assists. He had eight assists to one turnover, only the one turnover. But watching Tristan Newton or Stephon Castle, whoever they threw out there against him, Cam Spencer, he just, everything was so labored. Everything was so hard for Braden Smith. He had gone through this tournament and this entire regular season being a guy who was very easy to count on. And UConn made it seemingly impossible for him to make anything happen. But UConn's perimeter defense was phenomenal. Their offense was just as good. Tristan Newton, shout out to Tristan Newton. He was a transfer from ECU a few years back. He was the Final Four MOP. He had 20 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 for 5 from 3 in the national championship game. He had 0 turnovers as well. This guy, he was a guy that was on Memphis's radar a few years back, but they ended up passing on him. And you look back at it and you say, hey, maybe he would have been a very solid two-guard next to Kendrick Davis. Ultimately, that's not how that worked out. He ends up at UConn, and it was best for him. There's no doubt about it. But for that guy to win a Final Four MOP, you just got to tip the cap. Cam Spencer, watching him, he was their other transfer, and he started his career with Santi Aldama at Loyola, Maryland. And he ended up transferring over from Rutgers to ultimately get to UConn. He's a grinder, man. Like last night, seeing him sort of poke the ball out from Zach Edey, use his fouls, he rebounded at a high level. He had 8 rebounds, even though he's only 6'4". He was an absolute grinder. I think one of the funniest stories from last night, Connor, was Samson Johnson. Samson Johnson, number 35. He's forward, 6'10", 225 pounds. And to sort of look at sort of his night. 4 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 5 minutes, 5 fouls. And he came in at the beginning of the second half and just, I mean, it was Bill Belichick. It was Belichickian do your job type stuff. That's really what that was. He caught 2 lobs, frustrated Zach Edey, just sort of pounded on him at the beginning of the second half. And Zach Edey was really never the same after Samson Johnson had his little spurt of minutes. So there was that. It was a do-your-job moment from Samson Johnson. But to get down to brass tacks here about UConn, Danny Hurley, unbelievable, man. Motivator, game planner, team builder, program builder in particular. He's the best in the game right now, and it's not particularly close. The dominance, the pure dominance that UConn has shown the last 2 years is something that we have not seen in the 21st century. It's something we haven't seen since John Wooden, UCLA. And UConn basketball at this point, and I talked about this last year too, but they deserve to be consistently in the same conversation as Duke, as Kentucky, as North Carolina. This was their 6th national championship since 1999. They're a proven commodity. And it's undeniable at this point. And honestly, if we're speaking lately, those 3 schools I brought up, Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina, they're past those names. They've surpassed those names when it comes to success and winning national championships. Find me a more impressive basketball school in America than UConn right now. Do it. You can't. And it's kind of funny to see like Dan Hurley step up to the mic when he's accepting the trophy. And he said, for the last 25 or 30 years, UConn's been running college basketball. It's undeniable. It's absolutely the truth. And some people may take exception to that, but it is dead on. They've had some low years. I mean, after the Kevin Ollie issue, the first few years of Danny Hurley, when they were in the AAC, which is kind of bizarre to look back at it. You know, some of the finishes they had an eighth and a ninth place finish in the American Athletic Conference before they moved back to the Big East and started capitalizing on everything. But 1999, 2004, 2011, 2014, 2023, 2024, they have been able to do it. And since 1999, they have six. No one else has more than three in college basketball. They're 6-0 in national title games. And when you talk about basketball center of America right now, the women's side is 11-1 in that same span, 17-1 in national championships. And quite frankly, that program on both sides, women's and men's, didn't do a damn thing pre-1990. Didn't do a damn thing. But Jim Calhoun and Gino Auriemma, who do not really like each other, started that for everybody, and everybody has been able to capitalize. Even Kevin Ollie, who was there for a limited period of time, got them on probation, got them into some hot water. Even he won as a 7 or 8 seed. I think it was a 7 seed when he was able to capitalize and go win a national championship. This run they've been on is generational as an institution, and I don't think we sit back, appreciate it, and I don't think we realize it enough. Now, for this 2023-24 team in particular, we need to discuss their level of dominance on an all-time level. I mentioned John Wooden's UCLA. This is the first time since John Wooden's UCLA that a team has gone back-to-back and won each championship game by 13-plus. Their point differential in this tournament in particular was the best of all time, plus 140. They didn't play any close games. And then last year, I mean, with Andre Jackson Jr. and Adama Sanogo and Jordan Hawkins, guys that ended up in the NBA, two were first-round picks. One, I think, was picked up by the Bulls, and Adama Sanogo. They lost all of those guys. Three NBA-caliber players. They lost five of their top eight scorers from last year's team, and they got substantially better. They improved their win mark from 31 to 37, their point-per-game differential plus 14.4 to plus 18.4, and their tournament seed was 4 to the number one overall seed in America. The dominance is beyond the pale, and you have to recognize it, and you have to respect what they were able to accomplish these last 2 years. And to be honest with you, based on the way this program's been built, based on the mix of players they had, I mean, Alex Caravan was a sophomore. Donovan Kling is going to be gone, but he was a sophomore. Stephon Castle, five-star freshman. Tristan Newton, a 4 or 5 year guy. Cam Spencer was a 5 year guy. The mix of guys they have, the ability Danny Hurley has to go get high level, high character guys in the transfer portal as well as in the high school ranks. They're not going anywhere. And you look at the 2025 men's national championship odds, they still sit, I believe, in sixth at plus 1,800. So this UConn team's going nowhere, and they've shown that the last 2 years. And Danny Hurley deserves a whole lot of credit. And you just rewind back to 2020. They lost to Villanova, and he said, guys, you better get us now because we're coming. It's going to happen. And he called his shot, and on the back end, he was more than correct.
It's one of the most impressive runs, I think, in college basketball history, if not college athletics history. I mean, the past two seasons, the dominance that they have shown, like you said, we haven't seen it since UCLA and those teams. And, you know, you cannot overstate how dominant their defensive performance was last night. We've talked about all season, one of the reasons UConn has been our favorite to win the title all season was because they could beat you in any way. They could outscore you or they could grind you down with their defense. And last night they decided to just put on a defensive clinic. The adjustments that they made to Zach Edey after those first 8 to 10 minutes were phenomenal. Donovan Klingon, you know, I understand that Edey got him a few times early on, but basically after they made those adjustments and he just decided to sit on that left shoulder,
yep,
Edey was in hell. He was in hell because he can't go left whatsoever. And really, when you look at those 37 points, 17 of them came when the game was pretty much over. So they took him out of the game, and Hurley said afterwards, you know, we were like, yeah, we're going to let Edey eat, but we're going to completely shut off the water for everybody else, and that's exactly what they did. I'm not quite sure why Purdue just continued to try to feed Edey over and over and over again when that was exactly what UConn wanted them to do. It's like they fell into the trap immediately. So I mean, this UConn team, we've got to talk about them all the time. It has to be. And there's no doubt about it. I think UConn is basketball U right now. It is.
Yeah, and it's hard because, like, even like when UCLA was displaying this level of dominance, and let's be honest, a ridiculous level of dominance. They won 7 straight national championships. It was a lot easier, right? It was a lot easier for John Wooden to put together these teams, to have a corner on the market, to get the best guys in the world to go to the left coast and go play for him. It's so much harder to repeat and so much harder to be consistent in this day and age with the transfer portal and guys getting out and NIL and NIL funds being more than what UConn can offer year to year. And for them to be able to do that in this day and age, I just find it thoroughly impressive. Everybody else is trying to adjust to this day and age, the new college athletics, and Danny Hurley and UConn have done it seamlessly, flawlessly, and in a pure dominant fashion. And again, they are going absolutely nowhere. Looking into next year, they're plus 1,800 to go win the national championship. Those are the 6 best odds. They're looking for a three-peat now. That's where we're at. And last night, I guess I was hoping, for the most part, that it would stay close, and that's not ultimately what happened. I did see, if we're talking about the Final Four and then the national championship game on the mid-side, the national championship game was a 14.7, which was, it's a decent number. It's a very decent number for a men's championship game. But it got outdrawn by the women's. 18.7 is what they ultimately had as their average viewership. It's the first time in the history of the game where the women were able to outdo the men. But I can see why. Because of UConn's presence, because of their dominance, a lot of these games weren't all that fun to watch by the second half. I think that really, I mean, if we look back to last Saturday, that's really where the national championship was played for. Alabama had a chance to capitalize being tied up with UConn, but UConn took off, and that's sort of what it ended up being, and Purdue never really had a shot. But, I mean, when I look at this Final Four and ultimately what happened with UConn, I don't think it was that interesting. It was cool to see, but the betting odds even reflected that. There was a special on FanDuel where they were almost a minus 200 favorite against the field in the Final Four. Everyone knew where it was going to end, and it ended exactly where we thought.
I texted you this last night. It's UConn's ability to turn up the heat so fast is one of the things that was most impressive about this team. Even in that Alabama game, when it was tied up at 56, you blinked and all of a sudden they were up by double digits, and you're like, what happened? And last night, you know, when it went into halftime, you thought, okay, this might be a game. But the way that UConn closed the second half and how they opened the first – or they closed the first half and opened the second half, it was over. It was just over. There was no real reason to watch the game anymore because you just knew that UConn and their victory was inevitable.
Mm-hmm. And they were inevitable. And they will continue to be inevitable.
Well, because when Purdue came out and tried to play the exact same game they did in the first half – it was like, oh, this is over. There's nothing they can do.
Now,
they have no answers.
Zach Edey, I didn't think it was, like, just visibly, it was not the greatest game he'd ever played. I think in that second half, he really struggled once they made the adjustments. So, like you mentioned, trying to get him to go left, he couldn't really finish around the rim at the same level. And down the stretch, they just sort of let him get what he wanted, dunks and layups right off the backboard. Like, they just gave him the bunnies at the end of the game to really get his numbers up to 37-10. But I do want to say, Zach Edey, I have a lot of respect for what he was doing and what he was able to accomplish. I mean, this is the first time since 1969 that Purdue has been in a national championship game, and he was the focal point. He was the guy that made that happen. And I think there's a lot of people that are going to try to take it away because they're trying to talk about his NBA projections, and they say, oh, he's just tall. None of his skills are translatable. It seems like a lot of NBA teams, a lot of NBA draft analysts are starting to get on his side a little bit more. But don't discount what he was able to accomplish. He was a phenomenal college basketball player, and if that's all he ends up accomplishing and he's not that great at the NBA level, that's more than enough. He was a great player at this level.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being one of the best college basketball players we've ever seen, and that's what Zach Edey was. I understand that, you know, he did have a favorable whistle, but in many of the games, his dominance was there without the whistle.
And here's the thing. What really it comes down to is I think people don't like his style of play.
Sure.
Right? It's not fun to watch. It's not pleasing.
It's the Embiid of college basketball.
It's more like it's just not pleasing to the eye. They ran like a 1994 offense where they're just dumping into a 7-footer and saying, hey, go for it.
Right.
So, like, it's just not that pleasing to the eye. But just because it's not pleasing to the eye, don't mistake that for a guy not having skill. Don't mistake that for a guy being bad at basketball. It's very clear he's good. He's going to be a two-time National Player of the Year. He was great. He was absolutely phenomenal in his career, and he accounted for 61% of their points last night. If you try to blame him for what happened last night, think again. The rest of his team needed to show up. That included Lance Jones, who only had 5 points, Braden Smith, who had 12 on 4-for-12, Fletcher Loyer, who averaged 10 points per game throughout the regular season and shot 44% from three, 0 points, 0-for-5 from the field.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
0-for-1 from 3. You just have to tip the cap sometimes to the other team for having a great game plan and making it happen for their own team. And UConn was just a buzzsaw.
It was, you know, what was interesting, too, about UConn's defense is it wasn't like they were forcing a ton of turnovers of Purdue. Just every single shot Purdue took was contested. And nothing was ever easy for them except for those final few minutes when the game was kind of in hand because they only had 9 turnovers. Like, the UConn defense was just masterclass. And Hurley is probably the best coach in the country right now.
Yeah, I would say so. Now, we'll see what he does this offseason. He's going to have to replenish, but lost 5 of his top 8 scores last year. They got better. I'd imagine he's going to find a way to get it done. And I'll tell you what, know what the best recruiting tool is? Winning at this level.
Yes.
Winning 2 national championships in a row. People want to be a part of that. And I think UConn.
Well, and getting people to the NBA, and he's doing both.
I think UConn is going to be here to stay. Speaking of getting people to the NBA, what did we think of Donovan Clingan? He's definitely a Grizzlies target. I've seen him in a lot of, it was Bleacher Report, Tankathon, both have him at 7 to the Grizzlies, and we'll see how the lottery shakes out. But I'll say this. I think there were some people, you saw a lot of people last night in Grizzlies Twitter and Grizzlies, you know, circles, so maybe a little bit disappointed with his first half performance. But one thing I will say, I was not discouraged by anything I saw from Donovan Clingan, and it did not keep me from thinking that he'd be good in a Grizzlies uniform. And really what I attach to is the adjustments he made last night and the defense he started to play on Zach Edey in the second half. And even in the first half, I do want to let people know, like, that's the style of ball he was asked to play against Zach Edey last night is something he will never have to face in the NBA. A guy who just parks his feet in the paint for 5 to 7 seconds at a time and uses post moves at 7'4" to try to get up over top of you. That's never going to be the case, never going to be what he does in the NBA. He's going to have to battle against bigs, but not that style of big, not that style of basketball. It's a completely different style in college than it is in the NBA. That's not, I mean, hashtag analysis, I understand. I'm stating the obvious there. But nothing about Donovan Clingan's game last night discouraged me from wanting him in a Grizzlies uniform, potentially.
If anything, it encouraged me because he did exactly what he was asked to do. He was deployed as a defensive player last night against Zach Edey, and he did his job very well. He made it really difficult for the best player in college basketball. He wasn't fouling too much. He was scoring the ball when they threw it to him. He was 5-for-8. He was pretty efficient from the field. I thought he moved his feet great. The reasons why I want Donovan Clingan on the Memphis Grizzlies, he showed last night. I was pleased
solid
with his performance.
Solid and pick and roll defense.
He moves his feet well. And like you said, the closest thing that he's probably going to see to Zach Edey in the NBA would be a Joel Embiid type. And guess what? Your help defender is Jaren Jackson Jr.
With Joel Embiid, they're not going to just dump it into the low post consistently and get him these deep touches all the time. He'll take it from the short corner. He'll take it from the high post and try to get off the bounce. And I think Donovan Clingan is one of those guys that is very well suited to be able to move his feet in front of guys like that, that are more skilled, that try to get off the bounce, that will have some space between the rim and themselves. It's hard for any big to deal with what Edey's style is and what Purdue's style is. They just throw it in, get these you know, deep touches and try to get him up toward the rim, and he's 7'4" and he can finish easily in those situations.
He's a great defender, drop pick and roll defender. He's good around the rim. He does what he's asked. I'm pleased.
Yep.
I think he makes a lot of sense.
But UConn is at the top of the mountain again, back-to-back champs, and they did it in pure dominant fashion. Again, 75-60. They won over Purdue. Wasn't even that close, quite frankly. The second half, it was just UConn stabilizing this lead that they had built. Phenomenal stuff from Danny Hurley and everybody on that roster for UConn. It was very well done this entire year, and there was a reason they were the number one overall seed, and there's a reason that they've gone back-to-back. Now let's go ahead and transition and go ahead and grab a break. And when we come back, we have some more news in college basketball, and it's official finally. It's official finally. John Calipari, he's headed to Arkansas. $8 million per year for 5 years, and they're going to try to buck up this NIL situation for him. But he did leave Kentucky in Big Blue Nation with a little bit of a message. We'll talk about that next. 92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
John Calipari is headed to Arkansas, and we figured it out officially because he had a 3-minute video addressing Big Blue Nation where he said some really nice things about Big Blue Nation. He said, "This is my dream job. It's still my dream job. But the last few weeks, we've come to realize this program probably needs to hear another voice." And it feels like Kentucky fans tend to echo that sentiment. I still think the Kentucky fans may have some hate toward John Calipari, but considering the way this offseason has gone, considering the amount of hate he's garnered, the way the last 4 or 5 years have gone and losing to a 15 seed and a 14 seed, they're very frustrated. Now he moves on to Arkansas, and Arkansas, they get a coach who has never been bad. He's always been great at every stop he's ever been at. He recruits the best players. He can recruit the top of the sport without question. I mean, he got to a Final Four with UMass with Marcus Camby at one point, went on to go to a national championship appearance at Memphis, and then won a national championship in 2015 with Kentucky. This is a guy who will continue to be great. And I look at it as not like a guy who's stepping into a new era, sort of retiring where he's not going to have to deal with these huge expectations at Kentucky. I think that's sort of a misnomer of what's going on right now. I feel like he is moving forward and trying to progress his career by going to Arkansas. And people will say, you know, obviously they don't have the same expectations at Arkansas. He's not going to be held to the same standard. But when you look at what they're paying him and what they're ponying up, they're expecting results. This is a guy who's got a 5-year, $8 million contract now that he's headed to Arkansas with incentives that could get him up to where he was at Kentucky at $8.5 million per year. And they're trying to pony up on the NIL side and get him $5 to $6 million worth of NIL money to go field a good roster with. So with those resources being poured to John Calipari, this is not a retirement job. This is not a step. It's a step down, but it's not a step down in the aspect where he's not going to have to perform at the same level that he has always performed at. He's still going to have to perform, and Arkansas fans are going to expect that of him. But Arkansas, I think, fell up in the best possible way. I heard Jeffrey Wright sort of talk about it with Jeff in the morning yesterday. But it felt like with Chris Beard and Jerome Tang after Eric Musselman left, they were really interviewing the guys that would be behind John Calipari in the next head coaching, conversation, who would be behind him in those head coaching conversations. But they end up falling up into a perfect situation, and I really love this for both parties. I think it's good for Kentucky. I think it's good for Arkansas. I think it's good for John Calipari. This is a match made in heaven, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it makes sense for John Calipari. It makes all the sense in the world for Arkansas. I do think there's the risk for anyone in this is probably with Kentucky, just because moving off of somebody like John Calipari and trying to hire, you know, his replacement is going to be difficult. And they've already had, you know, a couple of the names that they are going after say no to them. Like Hurley has pretty defiantly, you know, said that he is not going to be going to Alabama. Nate Oates put out that statement. So it looks like Scott Drew might be the guy right now, and they're still having conversations about even a guy like Billy Donovan, but I would be surprised if he left the NBA for Kentucky. So there is risk there, but ultimately I think Kentucky fans and the brass there were ready to move on from John Calipari. But no, I don't think this is a retirement move whatsoever. We've talked the last few days about how we have a lot of respect for Arkansas fans because they seem to be pretty measured and patient with all of their takes. But, you know, I think that the expectation is elite basketball at the University of Arkansas now. That is what they want. They may give it a year or two so that Calipari can get this thing rolling. But after that, the expectation is going to be, hey, you need to be in the Sweet 16 probably, you know, within the first 4 years, I think is probably what Arkansas fans want. And that should be a fair expectation to have because we already know that John Calipari is an elite recruiter, if not the best one in the country. He's certainly one of them. And now it seems like he is finally going to start pivoting toward the NIL a little bit. We know that the money's going to be there because of the Tyson money. So it seems like a match made in heaven for Arkansas and John Calipari. It's going to be exciting to see what he can do there. I will say it is nice that I don't have to hate him anymore. You know, I still have some salty feeling toward John Calipari, but going to Arkansas, I can root for him at least a little bit now.
Yes, and
I still hate Kentucky.
I brought up the title odds for the 2024-25 title. They have moved. They're very high.
Arkansas is?
Yeah, they're at plus 4,000.
Don't they have one player right now?
They're at plus 4,000. They have one player, and they're going to see what they can do with Caleb Battle. I don't know how that's all going to work out. One thing I think Arkansas fans that have immediately brought up is the fact that they want him to start pivoting, and this is what Kentucky fans wanted for a while. They want him to start pivoting more to the transfer portal. One thing that I don't know that you're going to get from him, though, is pivoting directly to the transfer portal. He's had a lot of success in the past by going and getting these freshmen. I understand that the formula has changed, and you want a mix of guys. We saw UConn and Purdue, mostly homegrown talent, guys that have been there for 2-3-plus years. But at the same time, if you can still recruit five-star talent, if you can still recruit NBA talent, why the hell would you not do that? And you already see guys in this number two-rated recruiting class that he had in Kentucky getting out, opening their recruitment again. I don't know, like Aaron Bradshaw was a five-star number one center in 2023 who got into the portal. I feel like he was going to do that anyway. I don't know if he'll end up at Arkansas, but he's already out of Kentucky. There should be a lot of guys that could potentially follow him from this number two recruiting class. And I'd imagine, you know, as far as you said they'll give him 1 or 2 years, sure, they'll give him 1 or 2 years to really get settled and understand the job and understand the fans and get everything going. But I think this is going to be a hit-the-ground-running situation. I don't think they expect anything less than top five, top six seed in the tournament coming next year, considering what they know about John Calipari and how quickly he can turn over a roster and how quickly he can bring in NBA-level talent. They should expect greatness in year one from John Calipari because that's what he has shown he can do.
They should at the very least make the tournament.
Yeah, well, at the very least.
At the very least.
But I think most people in Arkansas circles are going to be looking for a top five, top six.
Sure, I'm talking more like the championship aspirations.
Yeah.
I think that they'll be like, he needs a year or two to get the program going, but, you know, Calipari it's a five-year deal. He needs to have a type of run during that 5 years, in my opinion.
All right, now let's talk about some Kentucky candidates here. Scott Drew seems to be the obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
He's 1-1 still at most books that you look at to be the next Kentucky head coach. Nate Oates is seemingly taking himself out. He said, I'm fully committed to Alabama and this university. I've already accomplished some great things, and I want to continue to do that. It looks like Jay Wright was one that they thought they could.
He just said no.
He said no. I'm not. And also, no. By the way, can we admit he is phenomenal? He's phenomenal as an analyst. Like he was great the entire tournament. So that seems to be completely out. Billy Donovan is an interesting one, but he seems pretty primarily focused right now on trying to see what he can do with the Bulls down the stretch of this season. And he was hired to get the Bulls back up, and it hasn't really been that way because of the Lonzo Ball injury, but they're 9. They're in the play-in right now, and they're going to have some postseason basketball that they're going to play. So I don't think if you're going to go hire Billy Donovan, you're going to get an answer anytime soon. I think Scott Drew is the obvious one. You make him say no, and then you move down your list. But also moving down that list, we've had Richard Pitino come up. We know Rick Pitino used to coach at Kentucky before he moved on to Louisville. Mark Pope from BYU. Kelvin Sampson, I don't think will happen. Chris Beard could definitely give some thought there. Bruce Pearl. Well, the wild card here, if everything else fails and they strike out, which I don't necessarily see happening. It just doesn't seem all that realistic for Kentucky to strike out on this many coaches. But Will Wade is an interesting one. Will Wade is certainly a guy who can recruit at a very similar level given the resources as John Calipari. But you do sort of wonder about him being able to keep up year after year after year in the SEC, because John Calipari ultimately got hated on down the stretch at Kentucky because he was not able to get through the first round of tournaments. He only won one tournament game. I don't know if Will Wade has this insane track record, this great track record of being phenomenal in the NCAA tournament. And I don't know if that would land as well with the Kentucky fan base. But I don't think they'll strike out on all these guys leading up to Will Wade. But maybe he could be an outlier or a wild card down the stretch if they do strike out on a bunch of people.
I feel like it's going to be a surprise if it's not Scott Drew.
Yeah.
It feels like it's right for him. It feels like it's right for Kentucky. It'd be a fantastic hire if he wants to continue to, you know, climb the ladder in the coaching profession. It seems like the Baylor to Kentucky jump makes a lot of sense. The 2021 rebuild he did at Baylor, you know, leading to that 2021 championship was a remarkable job. They were still very competitive last season, even though it wasn't one of their better teams. I think Scott Drew makes all the sense in the world, and I think it makes sense for him. So I'd be surprised if he said no.
This is the only thing that happens, though, in these conversations. With a guy like Scott Drew, who has elevated this job at Baylor to a national championship job, to a job where you can actually capitalize, get the best recruits, and win a national championship. It was not that way before. When you have so much sweat equity over 20 years built into a program and you're getting up there in age, do you really want to hop at a Kentucky job where the expectations are going to be harder and you have 20 years worth of good faith built up with a fan base that absolutely adores you? You're a statue coach. You're an absolute statue.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Coach, I know it's hard to deny $8.5-$9 million per year and to coach probably a top three job in America. You know, a dream job type situation. But Scott Drew is one of the few coaches in the country who has turned his program, it doesn't have a crazy amount of history on the basketball side, but has turned his program into his dream job. So I wonder if that sweat equity that he's built up over 20 years will come back and bite Kentucky in trying to go get him.
Maybe.
That's the only reason I can envision him saying no.
You know what helps with that is a blank check, and it feels like that's probably what he's going to get from Kentucky.
Yeah. But again, I mean, if you look at the odds, the sports books, he is even. I mean, he's plus 100 to be the next coach at Kentucky.
We also haven't heard from him yet. Usually when there's silence from a coach that's involved in one of these things, it means that there might be something moving.
Now, Hurley was an interesting – his conversation with the media was kind of interesting about the Kentucky job, right? He didn't necessarily say absolutely not. But he did sort of refer to his wife. He's like, I don't want to have a divorce with my wife. I've done pretty well here. You know, we'll see what she says.
Did you see
that? That's sort of how he approached it, though. It wasn't like an absolute no.
Did you see that he said that his phone was broken or something, so he didn't see anything about Kentucky on Saturday? And I was like, sure you did. Yeah. I was like, yeah. Tell your story.
Yeah, that would be a good hire, though, if they were able to make that happen. But I feel like he's a Northeast guy. I feel like he fits in really well with UConn. That's very clear after two straight national championships.
So if Scott Drew said no, who would your second choice for Kentucky be?
Oh, gosh. My second choice? I would talk to Billy Donovan. What do you want? What can we make something happen here? Because Billy Donovan is up there in age, but we've seen him do it in the SEC back in the day in 06-07 with Florida. And he really is one of those guys. He is a hard-ass worker. He is an unbelievable worker as a head coach. And he tries I trust him to be able to take over Kentucky and make some things happen. But if you get a no from Scott Drew, I think that would be my second call. But I think it's going to be really hard to convince him to leave the NBA right now, right? I heard one thought that was so far out there that I'm just going to bounce it off you. I think it's kind of insane. But it was sort of speculated on and talked about. I don't think this is even based in much reality. I don't think he would jump away from where he's at right now and the position he holds right now to go back to college to coach. But I heard someone bring up Brad Stevens. Would you reach out to him? Would you give him a phone call? He's now the director of he's the player ops guy, player personnel guy for the Celtics, and he's done a hell of a job sort of in the GM role. I can't see him stepping away from that in the slightest. I know what he did at Butler, and I know he got them to a national championship, but I don't see that being a guy that is going to even field an offer to come back.
There is a 0.0% chance Brad Stevens is going to leave the Boston Celtics right now and come coach Kentucky.
I know.
He doesn't want to coach anymore.
I know.
That's why he's not the coach of the Boston Celtics.
For the Celtics.
You think he's going to come
also,
to Kentucky and be like,
the
oh, yeah, I'm going to deal with the NIL as well.
No, the other thing about him is how damn good is he, his role, the role he holds right now, he's unbelievable.
He's king. He's basically the king of the Celtics.
He's so good at it. And they have been trying to stabilize that roster for a long time,
and
he figured it out.
Yeah, they're 13.
Adding Chris Stapps, bringing in Drew Holiday.
I'm so sorry.
Like, he has made some unbelievable moves to get that roster to where it's at. There's sweat equity built up for him right there.
Yeah, talk about sweat
There would
sweat
be
equity.
No real reason for him to – and I don't – again, you mentioned it. I don't think he wants to coach anymore. I think he's very happy with where he's at right now. So that was an out-there thought that
– if he wanted to coach, he'd be on the Celtics
sideline. But the thing is, the reason that a name like that gets brought up, we're talking about the Kentucky job.
Well, and they can't miss. You can't miss after Calipari. Like, if you're Kentucky, if you decide that it is time to part ways with a guy like John Calipari, you have to hit.
And also, Kentucky, with their history and what they've been able to accomplish with the financial backing and the resources and the keys you hold to the university, being the basketball coach – they can just swing for the absolute – I mean, they can swing for a home run. They can do whatever they – they can reach out to whoever they want, and people will likely pick up the phone. They may tell you no because they're happy with where they're at, but you can – that's why Billy Donovan is a guy who's even surfaced. No other job is really going to even have the thought process of bringing Billy Donovan out of the NBA right now. There's no other job, I think, really in America that you could talk about Scott Drew leaving Baylor for right now. You can swing for everything if you're Kentucky. And you just reach out, make these phone calls. But I agree with you. They can't miss. They cannot miss.
Yeah. And I do think the Scott Drew sweat equity 20 years at Baylor, I do think it absolutely matters. But at the end of the day, if he wants to be talked about as – you know, an all-time great coach in college basketball, if that's what he wants, if he wants to continue to climb that ladder, it just feels like the next step from what he's done at Baylor is jumping into Kentucky and seeing what he can do. Plus, it's going to be a ton of money. It's going to be a lot of money.
100%. Now, it is playoff time. I know we just got done with the NCAA tournament, but it's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel's your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers can get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that is safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/GabeK. That's G-A-B-E-K. Again, G-A-B-E-K. And make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel is America's number one sports book. You must be 21 plus and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issues, non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire just 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. If you have a gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline at 1-800-889-9789. We open up hour number two with Jeff Calkins. We have some national championship to recap. We have John Calipari to Arkansas. And, of course, we do have to talk about, I mean, he is the lawyer. So he will be able to shed some light on this. Ja Morant and the self-defense defense that he's trying to use in the Joshua Holloway case. There was a ruling today. We'll see what all that means. On the other side, when we talk to Jeff, 92.9 FM ESPN.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.